Occupational therapy is healing through engagement and occupation. So we call those activities of daily living. So things like getting dressed, going to the bathroom, taking a shower, the things that we engage in every single day is essentially what occupational therapy is. So it's facilitating that after something like a stroke or a traumatic brain injury. And kind of helping people get back to a level of engagement each day and help people do the things that they want to do and need to do every day. And that's kind of part of the reason why I love it so much, because it's very, it's a holistic profession and it's also very specific to the person you're working with.
We're diving into the world of occupational therapy, OT, a career that takes passion and proficiency for science to make a tangible difference in people's lives. Our guest, Chris Robbins, brings firsthand experience from her journey into the field of OT, sharing insights that illuminate the path for those considering this fulfilling caretaking profession. Chris will walk us through where an occupational therapist focuses their work with patients. She'll delve into the essential skills and qualities that are pivotal for success in OT and recount her process of choosing this career over similar healthcare professions like speech and physical therapy. Through Chris's story, we'll learn about the rigorous education and licensing process for occupational therapists and the realities of finding a job in this in-demand field. Additionally, Chris will share her reflections on achieving work-life balance as a new OT, providing valuable advice for future professionals on managing the emotional aspects of this job. Whether you're a student fascinated by the prospect of a career in healthcare or a parent supporting your teen's exploration of their future, this episode offers a comprehensive look. I'm Lisa Marker Robbins, and I want to welcome you to College and Career Clarity, a Flourish Coaching production. Let's dive right into a great conversation. Chris Robbins, dream guest, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
In full disclosure, we will tell everybody it is not a coincidence that we have the same last name. You are my niece by marriage. And so, just so everybody knows how this came about, we were at a family gathering back in, I think it was October maybe, when you guys were in town, or yeah, October. And I was just asking you, how is your new job in occupational therapy going? Because you're a recent OT grad. So proud of you. That was a haul to get there. And you said it's going well, and you were telling me about it. And then you hit on some stuff that you said, I wish somebody had told me, and I don't even remember exactly what it was at this moment, but you're like, I wish somebody would have told me on my path about this and this, and it wouldn't have necessarily changed your decision to go into occupational therapy, but you wish you would have been aware. And I thought, oh my goodness, the world needs to know that from my sweet niece. So that's how this episode was born. So we're going to talk about occupational therapy.
Yay. My favorite.
I know it is.
Profession.
So before we dive into like how you got here and all the things, like for somebody, I think people are very familiar with physical therapy because particularly like teen athletes or somebody gets a physical injury and they have to go in and they have to get PT. So that's much more, people can think of what it is. It's much more concrete than OT, occupational therapy. But this is a really great field. So in a nutshell, what is occupational therapy? What does an occupational therapist do for their patients?
So you're right. Most people do know physical therapy a lot better than occupational therapy. So occupational therapy is healing through engagement and occupation. So we call those activities of daily living. So things like getting dressed, going to the bathroom, taking a shower, the things that we engage in every single day is essentially what occupational therapy is. So it's facilitating that after something like a stroke or a traumatic brain injury and kind of helping people get back to a level of engagement each day and help people do the things that they want to do and need to do every day. And that's kind of part of the reason why I love it so much, because it's very, it's a holistic profession, and it's also very specific to the person you're working with.
That was a fantastic nutshell. So really, it's somebody who perhaps they'd been self-sufficient at one point, something has happened to take away that self-sufficiency, and you're helping them get as self-sufficient as possible in the future.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a question. Yeah. As I think about that job, and you say things like a stroke, a traumatic brain injury, like what age groups are you working with? Like right away when I hear stroke, I'm like, oh, are you just working with the elderly? But so what is that gamut? I mean, are there times when there's pediatric occupational therapy? What does that look like?
Yeah. So another good question. Another beautiful thing about OT is it spans the entire spectrum of life. So there are many, many pediatric OTs. In fact, most of my cohort was interested in peds. And there's early intervention OTs. So literally when you're born, like 1-2 week old, 1 month old, like you can work with those kinds of patients and populations. I have only ever worked with adults. So that's kind of where my brain goes post-stroke, post-TBI. But there's occupational therapists in schools. There's pediatric clinics specifically for PTOT speech just for kids. So that's another cool thing about the job. You can work with anybody, anywhere. And down the future, if I wanted to work in a school, I could. If I wanted to work in a pediatric hospital like Dayton Children's, Cincinnati Children's, they have occupational therapists there as well.
Okay, so that makes sense. So like somebody could think about like, well, I maybe want to do kids, and there would be plenty of opportunity. And we'll get to, as you know, you were doing, figuring this out, how you kind of landed there. But let's go back to high school, Chris.
Yeah.
Before I even knew you.
Yeah.
Before we were related. Did you, like, what did you think you were going to do, and what did you study in undergrad? Like, how did this begin to play out for you?
Yes. In high school, I went to Mount Notre Dame High School in Cincinnati. I absolutely loved it. And while I was there, I had the opportunity to take a lot of really cool science classes. And so through that, I kind of learned how much I loved science and math. And so that's kind of where the ball started. I realized, okay, I know I want to spend my life helping people. I know now that I love math and science. Like, what? How could I combine these two things? So going into college, I really didn't know where that route would take me. I studied biology and neuroscience because I knew that I would probably be going to graduate school afterwards, and with a bio and neuro undergrad, that would allow me to kind of do a variety of things. Like I could go to OT school, I could go to PT school, I could go to PA school, I could become a physician.
Let me ask you something about that. Like, when was the first time you ever thought about like OT, PT? Yeah, because there's some people that don't have the, and I know you are a helper, you're a caretaker. Mm-hmm. That is who you are by nature. So you weren't going to go the pure science route. You needed mm-hmm. to kind of merge these two. You have an aptitude in science and math. You have mm-hmm. a motivation for helping and understanding things like that. So when was the first time that you thought like your menu, you just took me through a menu of options that those undergraduate degrees could set you up for success in grad school? Mm-hmm. Obviously, from a pretty early age, you were okay with grad school. Not everybody is.
Mm-hmm.
Fewer than 20% of Americans hold an advanced degree. So it's not for everybody.
Yes.
When were you first aware of like OT, PT, some of those options?
Yeah. So I went to Miami University for my undergrad, and I knew somebody at Miami who was actually a speech therapist. And so she was studying speech pathology at Miami. And so initially I was like, well, that sounds super cool. I'm going to pursue speech therapy because I had a lot of respect for this person who was going through the program. And I took the intro class my first semester, and I did not realize how much speech therapy dealt with swallowing. I thought it was more of like speaking and cognition. And so I took that intro class, and I actually took it with a friend who sat there and like loved it. She was like, this is great. And I was like, I don't think I can do
it. You're
this.
Like, I'm out.
This is not for me. So through that, I kind of learned, okay, so there's speech therapy and there's also occupational therapy and physical therapy. So maybe I'll shadow a OT and I'll shadow a PT and kind of see what I think. And so I shadowed both of them, and I really loved my time shadowing an OT. I just felt like, okay, these are my people. This is what I think I would really love and enjoy doing.
So first of all, I want to highlight the job shadow. I mean, I just yesterday, and this will be an episode that will drop previous to yours, I talked to somebody who's an optometrist, who's my age, but he's an optometrist, and he has a son your age who is in optometry school right now. And he also talked about the power of job shadows. And this is something mm-hmm. I preach all the time for students as young as 16. Like mm-hmm. inside my college major and career coaching course, Launch Career Clarity, module 4, all of the lessons are about how to curate up close and personal experiences to help you rule in and rule out. And mm-hmm. it sounds like I want my listeners to hear, like, had you not actually gone to see those two in motion, mm-hmm. get up close and personal and talk to the people that are doing it, you would not have actually, like, on paper, there wasn't enough information to really decide between OT and PT.
Definitely. Yeah.
Is there something like, so you went to school with probably undergrad with people who were preparing for a PT path. And as you already said, like speech language pathology, what would you say, are there certain characteristics that would set apart, like what might make OT a better fit for a path for someone rather than PT?
That's a great question. So PT is more focused on like the biomechanical piece. I feel like they are more focused on like the walking and the ambulation, and OT is more focused on the activities of daily living, kind of like what I said before. And so I think, you know, like right now I work with a bunch of different OTs, PTs, speech therapists, and everybody kind of has a similar mindset. Like, we all want to help people. We are all, you know, people pleasers, people like
helpers, social service oriented people.
Yeah. We all like to help people. And I think that is like a huge essential quality to become a OT or PT. In terms of like the qualities that differ between occupational and physical therapists, I have had some people say like the PTs tend to push a little bit harder.
And push the patient a little bit harder?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So you've got to be okay with being like, nope, you're going to be in pain doing this. We're going to do it. Yeah. I just had, as you already know, rotator cuff surgery last summer. And
yeah,
I did lots of PT, and you have to mm-hmm. do it even when it hurts.
Yeah. Yeah. And OT is a very similar way, but it feels like to me sometimes we're not necessarily pushing people to that level of physical pain because we are more focused on just like the basic self-care needs,
the tasks,
the activities of daily living. Yeah.
That makes sense. So you would have to be okay with that. So, okay. So you're in undergrad, you decide through job shadows that it's going to be OT. Mm-hmm. What comes next? I know what comes next because I watched you do this, and it was a gauntlet. It was a marathon to apply to, get in, pay for all the things. So
yeah.
Let's discuss post-graduating undergrad. Like, what does the education look like, and what does it take to get in and all the things that you learned through that process.
Yes. So my pathway was a little bit different. So like I said, I studied biology and neuroscience, and most of my peers were actually pursuing like medical school, PA school, not necessarily like OT and PT. And so a lot of universities have like a pre-OT pathway, and Miami University did not have that. And so I really had to make sure that I had all of these prerequisite courses accomplished before I could even apply to go to graduate school. And each graduate school had different prerequisite courses that were required.
How did you even keep track of that? Like, how did you find out and keep track of it?
Yeah, so I knew I applied to three different occupational therapy schools. I knew I wanted to go ahead and pursue my doctorate because there was rumor that in a few years, everybody will need their doctorate to practice occupational therapy. So there are master's programs as well for OT. And that absolutely would have been an option for me. But I kind of thought, you know, I may as well just go get it all done with. So I knew I was going to be looking at schools that were doctoral programs. And I knew I wanted to be close to home. So in Ohio or nearby to Ohio. And so
as your aunt, I was like, yay.
Yes. So essentially, I just kind of Googled the different programs. They have like a list of prerequisites. Another big thing that you have to look for is the program accredited? So there were a few programs that were not yet accredited that I was pretty interested in, but you have to get your degree from an accredited program. And like they were close to becoming accredited, and they likely would have been accredited by the time I would have left the college. But those were kind of...
Well, there's no guarantee in that. And then
right,
if you know yeah. you want to be an OT, that's a risk. I mean, the university or the program could screw something up and not earn it by the time you're graduating. And now you can't go be an OT.
Correct. Yeah.
So I was like, we talk about this a lot. Like anything that requires a license, mm-hmm. sitting for an exam. I remember when you were going to write a test.
Yes.
And licensed by the state, has to be accredited. Like people need to be aware of that. I once knew a student who wanted to be a nurse, and she was really interested in a school who said by the end of her freshman year that they would be accredited for nursing. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I would not go. I would choose somewhere else. And that school ended up not being accredited in time.
Yeah. And so that's why in my criteria, I was like, okay, I want to pursue a doctoral degree and the school needs to be accredited. So there really aren't many OT graduate programs in Ohio and nearby states. So I ended up applying to three, and I just looked through the website and looked at the prerequisite courses to make sure I had them. And this was probably like junior year at Miami, because I knew, okay, if I need to take X, Y, and Z courses in order to even apply to this school, then I need to make sure that I have all those covered. And like I said, it is kind of challenging because each school grossly has the same courses, like anatomy, right? Physiology, all that kind of stuff. But then some courses required, or some graduate programs required physics and others did not. And some, you know, so you really just kind of have to be thorough.
Well, I think too, it's like, this drives home, and I hear this a lot, and I think parents and college students underestimate this. Like once you're in undergrad, you are treated as an adult, and it is up to the student to go out and get this information. Nobody at mm-hmm. Miami University was spoon feeding you like, hey, Chris, be sure you have physics if you want to go to this school.
Right.
You have to be mature enough and create the time and the space to figure that out on your own, or it's, or you're going to have missed opportunities and closed doors.
Yeah. And at Miami, they did have like a pre-OT PT club, and they did have like a pre-OT PT advisor. But at the same time, like you really have to put in the groundwork yourself to make sure that you are pursuing the route you want to go.
So that's a great suggestion, though, that like a club, just a club at the university. A lot of times, you know, students in, who are applying to college, they have to write this, why this school, you know, essay for the university. And I'm always like, you're looking for alignment between who you are and what you want and what they offer, right? You're not talking about their beautiful campus or or they're near Ohio, as you said, you wanted to be somewhat close to Cincinnati. And fortunately you did for those years and it, you got to stay close to home, even though you've left us now for the great state of Colorado for a short period of time. But that would be one of them. Like, look for, do they have clubs and advising? That's important. But at the end of the day, it's up to you to take advantage of those things.
Definitely.
So you get to PTOT. How long is the program?
So I applied to all these schools, and then you have to go through a bunch of different interviews. And then I ended up accepting an offer from Kettering College, and that was a doctorate program, so it's 3 years straight through. Which,
let's just, you didn't have summers off.
Yeah.
Let's be very clear. When you say straight through.
It is straight through.
It's three solid years. Like, that's your full-time job.
Yes, 100%. And, like, I got married in the middle of graduate school. We had, like, two choices. It was, like, either going to be over Christmas break or, like, we had a few weeks in the summer. And so we were like, okay, like,
that's when we did it.
Where we could get married. So it is a very, very intensive program and process.
How far into the three-year program was it that you started these clinical rotations that you would share with me about as you were doing them?
That's a good question. So the first 2 years essentially were pretty much didactic coursework. And then
so it was just being in school in classrooms, like, always.
And we would have like 1 week shadow opportunities. So those were called like our level one field works. But during those field works, you didn't necessarily get hands-on experience. It was more of just like observation. And then once you go through all the coursework, then you go to your level two field works, which are 2 12-week clinical rotation. And during that time, you are kind of the therapist. Like, you don't have a license. You're working under a licensed therapist, but you are taking the caseload. You know, you're learning essentially how to be an OT. And so you have two of those. And then I had a rotation in a skilled nursing setting, so a nursing home, for 12 weeks. And then my other 12-week rotation was outpatient neuro. And so essentially we ranked the different settings we wanted to be in. So like I said, you know, most of my peers wanted to do pediatrics. You could do a mental health rotation.
So you kind of knew, like, I don't want to go the pediatric route. So you ranked that you wanted to be in adult settings while your peers were ranking pediatric.
And so you really learn a ton in those settings because you are getting to use everything you learned in the classroom and apply it to real life and get a feel of like, okay, this is what it's like to actually be an occupational therapist.
Yeah. So were your, so you were graduating and then you had to sit for a licensing exam.
Yes. And so one thing to add too, after those 2 12-week rotations, then our final thing before we graduated was what we call a capstone experience. And most of the doctorate programs have these. And ours was essentially 12 weeks where we got to pick a site and we got to identify a need at the site. And then it was a completely different kind of field than the field work, because when you're on field work, it's very much like go, go, go. Like, you are working with the patients, with the clients. And then the last little task before you graduate is this capstone. And that's really where you get to be creative and use the skills that you have gained and basically create a project that fulfills a need at a site. And so that's something else to be aware of if you're looking into OT school, is that capstone experience too.
That's pretty cool. So how quickly after graduation, because it wasn't immediate, you were then studying and preparing, did you take that exam?
Yes. I I took the exam, I think like 3 or 4 weeks after I graduated, which is a pretty quick turnaround.
So some people would study longer and wait longer.
Yeah.
You're such a smarty pants.
Yeah.
Of course you were able to do that.
Yeah, so I took the exam a few weeks after I graduated, and I pretty much studied for probably 6 hours a day, went through a program, and then sat for my boards.
And you passed first try.
I did.
Is that
It was
common?
exciting. I would say most people do.
Yeah, most people do pass the first time. So was it hard to find jobs? Like, or do you feel like jobs are plentiful? Like, were your friends that you're graduating with easily finding positions?
Yeah. So that's kind of the beauty of working in healthcare is like people need help all the time, especially
Yeah,
as
that's not
people
going away.
are, yeah. And especially as people are aging. And so the really most of my classmates have jobs pretty
Before
quickly.
graduation, even.
Yeah.
Yeah, like you did. Okay. So
Yeah.
as we're wrapping it up, like what you had mentioned, like there were things that you wish you had known, or when you reflect on your experience and where you are now, and you're in a hospital setting and helping people, what last nuggets of wisdom do you want to leave our parents and students with?
Yeah, I think the first thing is when you're in college, really take advantage of every opportunity that you can. Shadowing different professionals. I was really involved in a program called Best Buddies, and that also kind of helps me find occupational therapy because it was a program for disabled adults, and I got matched with a peer, and we just got to hang out, and I got to learn so much more about that community. So I think just like jumping in and just joining different clubs and doing things that spark your interest will really allow you to find, okay, this is what I have a passion for, this is what I want to do. And then in terms of the working world, I think the biggest struggle that I have had is separating work from life. And I didn't necessarily anticipate that to be a struggle because, like I said, when you're in those clinical rotations, if you kind of mess up, like it's okay because you're working underneath someone, you're not licensed, you're still a student. And so now I have my own license, and it makes things a little bit more, not scary, but just more real, I
Like you
guess.
feel like a responsibility.
Yeah, a increased responsibility. And so I think, kind of with that increased responsibility, I have really like, I absolutely love my job. I absolutely love my work. And I love working with the patients, and a lot of times I bring that home with me. And so, kind of learning to separate work from home has been a challenge for me. I've been working about 8 months, and I think I'm kind of starting to figure out how to do that. But when you do have like such a caring, you care for people and you want to take care of these people, and you just like, a lot of times it's not a great situation, and you're really like being a light to them and you're helping them. And then you have to figure out a way to be like, okay, I'm going to leave that at the hospital. I'm going to leave that at work. I'm not going to come home and think about it, which I often do. And so that's kind of something that I feel like school just can't necessarily prepare you for. So just having coping strategies that work for you and that allow you to separate work from life, I think, is just really, really important in healthcare.
I think that, I mean, that's great advice for anybody, not just
Yeah.
healthcare, and people who are, you're a natural caretaker. I've watched you now for many, many years. But it could even be somebody who has a tendency to, this would be myself even, be a workaholic. Like, it's hard for me to say no. Sometimes I don't have capacity to help somebody who is asking for coaching or help and I can tend to work too much because I'm not saying no enough, and I think that any of that, it just takes time and we have to be gentle with ourselves. give ourselves a little bit of grace as we navigate new things and stick to our values and having a whole healthy life. Mm-hmm. But I know you're, I'm glad to hear you're making progress at that. I mean, that was one of the things that you had shared. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like, as you've done with many things in the past, Chris, you're being very intentional about how you live. And I love that about you. So thank you, my dear niece, for coming on and sharing your story.
Yes, of course. I'm happy to. I love, you know, some people don't really know about occupational therapy. So I'm honored that you wanted to chat with me and that I could kind of share what OT is.
I know it'll be a tremendous help to many. Thanks, Chris.
Yeah.
It's clear that OT is more than a career. It's a calling to make a meaningful impact on the lives of those in need. From the dedication required in the educational journey to the deeply rewarding connection with patients, Chris has shared invaluable insights for anyone considering this path. For students and parents looking to explore further occupational therapy, an essential next step is understanding the educational foundation required to enter the profession. By visiting the Accreditation Council for Occupational Therapy Education, you can discover accredited schools offering programs in OT at both the master's and the doctoral levels. This resource is crucial for anyone serious about pursuing a career in OT, providing detailed information on program specifics, prerequisites, and the accreditation process. Dive into this resource by visiting the ACOTE website link that we've put in the show notes. Thank you for joining us on this episode of College and Career Clarity. By sharing this episode and engaging with our content, you help us make more families have an informed decision about their educational and career paths. Remember that your student can find a fulfilling career path with the right information and the right resources. If you enjoy our episodes, sharing, following the podcast, rating, and reviewing helps us resource more students to launch into a successful future.